Again, in this teaching in Samuel, it's just a continual progression of David's life. It's not a history book, again. It's not a history book of David's life, what he did. But it's a pattern of how we can live our lives. We can see his mistakes. We can see his victories in all the things that he did. And realize that all these are symbolism of how we can fail and we can achieve the things that God has set into our lives. So if we read this book, not as a history book, but a book of enlightenment of how to live our lives, how much better and how much more profitable will it be for us? See, most people read this as a history book because it was so many thousand years ago. If it's history, it won't do me any good. I need to know what it is right now in the present tense in my life, because I'm not living back there or way out in the front somewhere. I only live today. That's all I have. It's called the Day of the Lord. The chapter 11 we'll start with this morning, verse 1. And it came to pass after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon and besieged Rabbah, but David tarried still at Jerusalem. And it came to pass in an evening tide that David arose from off his bed and walked upon the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman washing herself. And the woman was very beautiful to look at, or look upon. And David sent and inquired after the woman. And one said, "Is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Elam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" And David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her, for she was purified from her uncleanness, and she returned to her house. And the woman conceived and sent and told David, and said, "I am with child." And David sent to Joab, saying, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." And Joab sent Uriah to David. And when Uriah was coming to him, David demanded of him how Joab did, and how the people did, and how the war prospered. And David said to Uriah, "Go down to your house and wash your feet." And Uriah departed out of the king's house, and there followed him a mess of meat from the king. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his lord, and went not down to his house. And when they had told David, saying, "Uriah went down into his house," David said to Uriah, "Camest thou not from thy journey? Why then didst thou not go down to your house?" And Uriah said to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah abide in tents, and my lord Joab and his servants of my lord are encamped in the open fields. Shall I then go to my house to eat and to drink and to lie with my wife? As you livest and as your soul liveth, I will not do this thing." And David said to Uriah, "Tarry here today also and tomorrow, and I will let you depart." So Uriah abode in Jerusalem that day and the morrow. And when David had called him, he did eat and drink before him, and he made him drunk, and at evening went out to lie on his bed with the servants of his house of his lord, but went not down to his house. And it came to pass in the morning that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. And he wrote in the letter, saying, "Set you Uriah in forefront of the hottest battle, and retire you from him, that he may be smitten and die." And it came to pass when Joab observed the city that he assigned Uriah to a place where he knew the valiant men were. And the men of that city went out and fought with Joab, and there fell some of the people of the servants of David, and Uriah the Hittite died also. Then Joab sent and told David all the things concerning the war, and charged the messenger, saying, "When you have made an end of telling the matters of the war to the king, and if so be that the king's wrath arise, and he say to you, 'Wherefore approach you so nigh to the city when you did fight? Know ye not that they would shoot from the wall? Who smote Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal-Seth? Did not a woman cast a piece of millstone upon him from the wall that he died in Thebez? Why went you nigh the wall when Then say thou, thy servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. So the messenger went and came and showed David all that Joab had sent him for. And the messenger said to David, surely the men prevailed against us and came out unto us into the field, and we were upon them even to the entering of the gate. And the shooters shot from off the wall upon the servants, and some of the king's servants be dead, and thy servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. Then David said unto the messenger, thus shalt thou say unto Joab, let not this thing displease you, for the sword devours one as well as another. Make thy battle more strong against the city and overthrow it, and encourage you him. And when the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah her husband was dead, she mourned for her husband. And when the morning was past, David sent and fetched her in it to his house, and she became his wife and bare his son. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. Some good stuff in this chapter. Good stuff for us to live by. Now, in this chapter, we'll go back to the first of it and start over again to break it out. That it came to pass after the year was expired or completed, at the time when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel. Now, there's a problem here. It said this was a time when the kings went forth to battle. What was David? Where was David at? He didn't go to battle like he should have. Springtime was when they went out and did their battle. Springtime is a time of life. Of course, there's things that die there too. And he didn't go with the pattern that God had set up for him with the kings. But it was all done for a purpose to let us learn some things. So what you say, let's try to learn as much as we can from this to put in our own lives. Does anyone know what the name Joab means? Yahweh fathered. Now, if God is the Father, what does that make you? Son. A son of God. So he represents the Son of God. That's what his name means. And his servants. Who would that be? Christ and his first fruits. With him and all Israel and all of Israel. And they destroyed the children or the sons, or literally, I'll say it another way, the sons of Ammon. Who is Ammon? Carnal mind. The carnal mind. See, that's what we got to deal with. Our battle is not external, is it? Battle's internal. So what would the children of Ammon be? Thoughts. Absolutely. The thoughts coming from this carnal mind. Okay? And that's what they went and destroyed. And besieged Rabbah. What does Rabbah mean? Literally, it means the great one. Okay. Who do you think the great one might be that was besieged? This is a negative context. Well, Adam, the great one, self, you know, the carnal mind. See, that was the one that was besieged because of all the children being, the thoughts being destroyed. When they did what they were supposed to and went to battle when they were supposed to, guess what happened? They destroyed them. When they went against God's will and desire, what happened? They were defeated themselves. See? So it's all about God's timing, not our timing, is it? But David tarried still at Jerusalem, still hanging on to his religion, wasn't he? See, instead of doing what God said, he came up with a better idea. Now everybody wants to give Saul down the road for what Saul did. God told Saul to go in there and do certain things, and Saul didn't do it, did he? But was David totally obedient? Then why did Saul get the bad rap and David get the good rap? Somebody isn't looking at this very clearly, are they? David did just as bad of things as Saul did. All Saul did was disobey God. He didn't kill the king Agag and he didn't kill all the sheep that he was told to. And you could say what Saul did was a good thing. Not a God thing, but a good thing. And David goes out and steals another man's wife and kills her husband to cover up his unfaithfulness. I'm not seeing David as this righteous man just yet in his actions. See? He thinks he is. He's came to a place, and I'll just call it what it is. It's his Pentecostal realm. He's come to a place where he sees himself as a king, and I don't have to do nothing now. I'm better than everybody else. And that's what our Pentecostal experience does to us. It makes us feel like we have arrived and everybody else is a piece of dirt. Now, I'm not talking about a Pentecostal church. I'm talking about a Pentecostal thought in your heart. Okay? Because God wasn't talking about Pentecostal and apostolic and Baptist. And that wasn't even existent at the time. He was talking about thoughts in us. He's dealing with an internal thing. So David was still hanging around in Jerusalem when he should have been out of there. There's a time when you get out from amongst them, don't you? It says, come out from her and touch not the unclean thing. But anyway, he was still there where he shouldn't have been. And it came to pass at time of evening, or at the time of evening, in an evening tide. It says, at a time of evening. Now tell me what happens in the evening. What? Sun goes down, gets a little darker, harder to see. So maybe David's vision is not real clear, okay? Not that it was an evening time, but in his thinking process, he was a little darkened because something jumped out on him when he walked on this roof. Now, he was exalted to the highest place he could get. He was on the roof of the king's palace. So guess what? He had his self-exaltation up there. And he was probably looking around saying, ain't this sweet? This is mine. All this is mine. Look what I've done. And whenever we get into this self mode, something's going to happen. I guarantee you that a woman is going to pop into the scene. And I'm not talking about a female woman per se. But your woman is going to take over because the man is crowing. When the rooster crow, the hens show up, don't they? Okay? And David stood up on this roof and he began to see things he probably shouldn't have delved in. True or false? And he saw Uriah's wife, Bathsheba. He inquired about her. What did they tell him? She got a husband. And what do you think he said? What do I care? I'm the king. I'm the son of the king, and I am the king. I can do whatever I want. Yeah, you can. But there's a price to pay for those things that we do that's against God's will. In the last verse in this chapter, what did it say? The things that David did displeased the Lord. I don't want that epitaph written on me. You hear me? And I don't think you want it either, do you? I don't want an epitaph written when I go, this man done things that displeased the Lord. I done things that I'm not proud of in my life. So have all of you. Everyone that's hearing my voice can say the same thing. We've all done things we're not proud of. But there's a time comes when we draw a line in the earth and say, I'm stepping over it and I'm not going back. Something has changed in my thinking process. And in David's process yet, he realized he was a son, a king, and a son of the king. But guess what? His maturity level had not come. His discipline level had not come. He had not learned to discipline his emotions yet. So consequently, guess what happens? His woman got the better of him. He began to think. Out of his emotions and out of his lust, he looks down upon this woman. Now, I'm going to ask you something. I want you to think a second. Do you think this was the first time that David ever saw that woman? Because I bet you that king was on that roof every day. He probably knew exactly what time she took her bath. At least every Saturday night. He knew when she took her bath, and he knew her husband was away. And he knew she was probably very lonely. Right? Kind of like his thinking process set the scenario up for him, and it got the better of him. True or false? See, he cultivated this thing. He knew that was going on. Do you think a king could walk up on his palace and look at anything in his eyesight and not know who, what, and where it belongs to? He knew it all along. I'm not going to get ahead of the story when the prophet comes back and talks to him. We'll get that later. But it said he arose from off his bed and walked on the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman. You know what he saw? He saw his soul starting to work. He got off his bed at night, dark, and he sees this woman over there with her light. In this obscure vision, he can see this good-looking woman. The word there isn't beautiful, but it said she was good to look at. Well, you know what God did? He made women something good to look at for men, not for other women. I ain't going to get on that horse and ride it either. He made her to look good to the man, and the man to look good to the woman. That was God's way, and they can pass all the laws they want to, and they can hook up, stand on their heads or on their ears or anything else. It don't make any difference to me. It's still not what God said. That's their battle. And David sent and inquired after the woman, and one said, "Is not this Bathsheba?" Do you know what that word Bathsheba means? The daughter of an oath, daughter of a covenant. Okay? The daughter of Elam, that's the god of the people, Elah, El, El-I-Am, is what it is, El-I-Am, god of the people. And the wife of Uriah, the Hittite. Do you know what Uriah means? It means a flame of Yah or the flame of God. Let's say it another way, the fire of God. Our God is a consuming fire or a refiner's fire. And right here, I think this fire has some consuming to do. And he was a Hittite. Does anyone know what a Hittite is? And I'm going to correct something that I've taught for a long time. I made a mistake. I'm not afraid to say that. On Deuteronomy 7, do you remember the sevenites that I've taught you on before in the years past? Turn with me there just for a moment. I want to correct this because I was corrected. And if I'm corrected, I'll certainly give it to you so you can have a better view of it. Deuteronomy 7:1. I saw something in my studies when I got in here, and I saw I missed something. And I was a little bit casual. I mean, it doesn't change a whole lot, but it's just something that I know is right, and I want to address it and put it back in order. Okay? The first one mentioned in here of the ites is what? Hittite. What did I tell you it was? Hello? Okay. Hang on a minute. Let me get back where I'm at in here so I can get myself straight again. Okay. I told you it was violence, right? But it's wrong. This one should be fear. I understand it changes six. That's what I'm getting at. Violence should be on number six. On the Hivite is violence. And the Hittite is fear. Didn't change anything in a big perspective, but it's just a little piece, and if it's wrong, it's wrong. It's still in there. You still got to deal with it. But I just want to put it back in the proper order. Okay? I saw something, and I got into a little more depth of something, and I found it very clearly that I had missed this one, and I just got them reverted, these two, the Hittite and the Hivite, and the names are very close, and you can get caught in. Hivite is violence, and the Hittite is the spirit of fear. Okay? So it's not a major thing, but it's still something that I found that I said wrong. If I misquote something, I want to set it right. Okay? Hope you appreciate that. I appreciate God correcting me. And if anyone can bring something to me that I have misstated, I would gladly see it. And make sure, and if I can see that it's wrong, that I made a mistake, I'll thank you for it. I won't be angry with you. Okay? Okay, so anyway, we're back to the Hittite, and that is violence. So there's a little bit of consuming here in violence. There was violence in this man's life, wasn't there? Didn't the word say if you live by violence, You live by the sword, you die by the sword. This man had a violent life. That's what he was called to be. God used the man. Tell us the story. Told everything about her. So David knows all about his life. And David, being the king with his relationship with God, should have known that Bathsheba was a covenant woman. She was already covenanted to her husband. Okay, she was married. And that she was from the people of God. Her husband was the fire of God. Violence. He should have known all these things were in his future if he dealt with it. But did it back him off? He was consumed with the lust that he saw. Now, the book says he had 400 wives and 600 concubines. My God, what need have you anymore? You know, one's enough. You know, what's this thousand and still hungry? You know, something's wrong. I think he had some emotions that were not disciplined. Okay? Absolutely. Absolutely. We put ourselves in a position where we say, I couldn't stop myself. Yeah, you could have. Everybody can stop themselves. It's Ed, remember that thing you told us one day? You said you was on the way to Jackson and God spoke to you in a car and you said, I can't do it. And he said, yeah, you can. You don't want to. Remember? And that's the truth about everything we do. We can always stop if we want to, but do we want to or not? At the time, in the heat of the passion, of whatever it is, do we want to stop? Usually when it's already over, we say, oh, I'm sorry, I wish I hadn't done that. But I already done it, see? It was done in darkness. Ignorance was there. And his emotions were running wild. Don't understand that, but I understand his was. And David sent messengers to her, and she came to him. And he lay with her. For she was purified from what? But you know what it really says in the language? Religious impurities. That means she was available physically. She wasn't having her period, you know. In that time, they were physically or religiously impure. She'd already had her cycle. That's probably saw her cleaning up, see? So he got wind of that, figured out what was going on. And she returned to her house. Now, goes to show you something. If the woman represents the soul, let's take this into a spiritual aspect and see something here. Who's in control in your house, the man or the woman? See, the man. I'm not talking man and woman in marriage. I'm talking about in you as a person. The Christ, the man, or the woman, the soul. Now, in this same pattern, the man took advantage of the woman. What right did she have to deny the king? She couldn't. Even though she was married and he did something that was not lawful, you know, she didn't have much choice, did she? He could have said, behead her at the end of that. She couldn't have told on him then, could she? But anyway, she submitted to the king. Wasn't right. She went through it. Went back to her house. And she became pregnant. She conceived and sent and told David and said, I am pregnant. No, that was a surprise. That was a surprise. That's right. Better watch what woman you give your seed to. And David sent to Joab, and Joab's that son of God, saying, send me Uriah the Hittite. Send me the fire of God. Oh, you better watch what you ask for. Send me the fire of God. Let me read you a couple verses. Malachi 3:2 says, our God is a refining fire. And Luke 12:49. Let me read it to you. 12:49. Jesus said this, I am come to send a fire on the earth. And how I wish that it were already kindled. What it literally says in the language. And how I wish it was already kindled. He didn't like to see what he had to go and do. And I'm sure right now there's some things going on some people didn't wish they really didn't have to go through. We all get there. And he says this, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." And Joab sent Uriah to David. Okay? And when Uriah was come to him, David demanded how Joab, what? The word "did" here is prospered. How did Joab prosper? Okay? It's in here several times, and each time it means the same thing. Not did, how he prospered. And the very last verse, word in this verse, what is it? Now that's the same word that's rendered "did" in both those other places. Somebody had to work overtime to figure out that one, didn't they? Why do they render it three times in a verse two different ways? But anyway, how he prospered and how the people or the troops prospered and how the war prospered. And David said to Uriah, "Go down to your house and wash your feet." And it didn't say feet. Because there's another part of this word that means something else. Go wash your privates. Go wash yourself. Why did he want him to go wash himself? So he could go lay with his wife. He wanted to clean himself up so he could go be with his wife. Because that's not the top of the order when you're out there fighting for your life in battle, is it? Go clean yourself up so you can go lay with your wife. Make yourself presentable to her. And Uriah departed out of the king's house, and there followed him a mess of meat. That really sounds good, don't it? It's literally a portion of meat. So David sent food to their house so they could have a feast. He wanted him to drink. He wanted him to eat and get full and go to bed. And he figured if he could get him there, my misactions have been covered up. If I can get him in bed just one time, see, then he'll, in his mind, will say, "Hey, I got a son." You know, say, "That's okay." But it didn't work that way. God wouldn't permit it. And you know what? Anything that happens in our life, we cannot cover up. We can only temporarily maybe cover our tracks a little bit. Kind of like a cat covering up his mess when he gets done. You know, the sand, you know? But that sand don't stay on there very long. Rain's gone. And it's exposed, that big pile still laying there. And David left something that's going to be exposed. Just like every one of us, if we do something, it will be exposed sooner or later. Jesus told us, you reap what you sow. Jesus said, everything that's done hidden will be uncovered, won't it? It'll be exposed. And it will. Whether we think so or not makes no difference. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his Lord and went not down to his house. Here's a man, though he was a tool of fire, his name means the fire of God. He was from a violent people, but yet he was laying at the house of God. You know why? Because God creates the good and the evil. It's necessary to have that fire of God there, that consuming fire. We must have a negative to go along with the positive to make everything work. And when they had told David, saying, "Uriah went not down to his house," David said to Uriah, "Came thou not from your journey? Then why didn't you go down to your house?" Now, don't you know that everybody in the castle knew everything that was going on? They had all the gossip and all the slander. And as soon as they were watching him, and when he went out there and crawled up by the king's house, he didn't go where he was supposed to go, what they thought he would go. See, kind of like in Samuel, where the cow was taken, the calves were taken away from the cow, and said, "We'll find out if God's in this or not, because if the cows go back to Israel and don't go back to the calves, then we know God's in this thing, that they'll leave their own calves to take this ark back." And David's laying this thing out here, setting it up, saying, "We'll find out what's going on." And he even checked him here and said, "Why didn't you go down to your house?" And Uriah told him, "The ark of Israel," it's not "and," "the ark of Israel and Judah abide in the tents, and my lord Joab," which represents the Son of God, Christ, "and the servants of my lord are encamped in open fields. Shall I then go to my house and eat and drink and lie with my wife? As you live and as your soul lives, I will not do these words. Debar. Tell me.
He saw all his desires.
And he became what? Jealous. He became jealous because the soldier under him was more righteous than he was. And don't you know, there was a fire upon him then. See? He would not betray. He was covenant with his people. He was loyal and faithful to David and to the rest of Israel. And David wasn't faithful yet either. We've all been in that situation. Okay? Verse 12, he goes on, and David said to Uriah, tarry here today and tomorrow. Right? He said, tarry here today also, and tomorrow I will let you go, or let you depart. So Uriah abode in Jerusalem that day and the morrow. How many days? What are we talking about? Passover and Pentecost, they abide where? In Jerusalem. But you know what? Paul said our place is in heaven. The place is in Christ. Didn't say it was Jerusalem, did he? Didn't say it was Jerusalem. Didn't he say, my kingdom is not of this world? My citizenship is of another place? Another world? You better believe it is. You better believe it. He's not in the fire. He's not into judgment. He's not into punishment. He's not into retaliation. He's not into revenge. And the way the church teaches, God is a vengeful God looking for everything. Steve, I'll say this for you and Shannon's benefit, and Keith, you guys wasn't here last week when I taught it. In Corinthians, when he said that he was a vengeful God, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. The word vengeance there is not vengeance. It's vindicate. Do you know the difference between the word? Vengeance means revenge and retaliation. Get even. Vindicate means to clear you. See? So we're cleared. See? God, it's God's place to vindicate us. See? And he did by sending his son to the cross. Nobody wants to see that. That's all right. But it's vindicate. Okay. But anyway, for the first 2 days, and in Hebrews 6 and 3, does anyone know what it says? I'll just brief it down and paraphrase it. Huh? If God permits, see? So it's all about God permitting each one of us to go from our Passover experience to our Pentecostal experience. And in those two realms, we're in a lot of fire. And when you come out of those realms and you're seated in heavenly places, tell me what happens. The fire ceases. You come to peace. Remember what he said? The serpents eat what? The dust of the earth. The dust in the sand realm. See? And it were called what kind of serpents? Fiery serpent. Is that a coincidence? That the fiery serpents will bite you? Huh? In the first two realms? Not a coincidence, is it? So we got to realize that God's going to permit us to go through these things, these negative fiery serpents in our life, whatever they may be, whatever handle gets label puts on them, doesn't make any difference. That's there for our benefit, isn't it? He permits us to go through this so that we can have the brazen serpent lifted up on the cross, and all we had to do was look upon him. And doesn't the book say, Paul say, look unto Jesus, the author and finisher of your faith, the Christ, the author and finisher of your faith. See, that's all we have to do. Look to him for the answer. Didn't just mean look at him. Look to him for the answer. Okay? So he's directing us to Christ. And that's what it is here. And David had called him. When David had called him, he eat and drank before him, and he made him drunk. And at even he went out to lie in his bed with the servants of the Lord, but went not down to his house. See? Even when he tried to get him drunk in front of the king, he could not do it. He could not make him go where he knew he wasn't being faithful. And it came to pass in the morning, I mean, something else just popped in my head. What about Joseph? Who would have known if he'd have slept with the woman there, huh? When she tried to get him to sleep with him and he wouldn't do it? In Potiphar's house, yeah, Potiphar's wife. Remember this little saying we got over here in this thing right here? Character is who you are when no one is watching but God. See? Doesn't make any difference who sees what you do. God knows what you do. He knows what you're going to do before you do it. So if I think of doing something wrong, who has to come and tell me I'm wrong? Nobody. You already know. God in you already knows what you're going to do. And if it's going to be wrong, you're going to touch that hot thing and burn your finger for a reason, to learn something from it. Not to just say you were bad, but to learn something from it. And it came to pass in the morning that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. And he wrote in the letter saying, "You put Uriah in the forefront of the most violent battle and withdraw from him, that he may be smitten and die." Something tells me David's heart wasn't right. No, let me say it again. His flesh wasn't right. His heart was right because God said he was a man after his own heart, but didn't say he had it yet. Did he? He's a man after my own heart. He really loves me, but he hasn't learned to discipline his woman. I'm not talking physical woman. I'm talking about my soul. I haven't learned to discipline my soul. That's what the whole thing is. Teaching me how to control my emotions so I don't get all bent out of shape. Okay? If I'm in control, Keith, you do this in your job. If you get angry, how many good decisions do you make? But when you're calm, you can think, and your emotions don't get involved in there, and everything's fine, isn't it? That's what we've got to do with every day of our life. The book says, take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Another place it says, be swift to hear and slow to speak. When you're in emotions, guess what? Them words are not slow. They're fast and furious, aren't they? See, we're breaking out of the pattern that God has given us. If we follow the pattern, we can't make those mistakes. That's why he said in John, if you're born of God, you cannot sin. You cannot miss the mark. You know why? Because if you're swift to hear and slow to speak, how can you be wrong? Let God put it in there the right way. Don't you try to get in front of him. Anyway, it came to pass when Joab observed the city that he assigned Uriah to a place where he knew the valiant men were. He knew where the hardest place to get through, the most impenetrable place where the most valiant fighting men were. That's where he put Uriah. And the men of the city went out and fought with Joab, and fell some of the people, the servants of David, and Uriah the Hittite died also. And Joab sent and told David all the words concerning the war, and charged the messenger, saying, when thou hast made an end of telling the words of the war to the king, and if so be that the king's wrath arise, and he say to you, wherefore approached you so nigh to the city when you did fight? Knew you not that they would shoot from the wall? In David's guilt and in David's emotions and fear of being found out what he did, he sent a man to his death, didn't he? And a man who was sent as a messenger. A messenger is not one of authority. A messenger is just to carry the message of the one with authority. And David dressed down a man here who did not make the decision to fight. His job was to carry a message back and forth between the king and the captain. Why is King David jumping on this man? He's trying to put all the blame toward the people in the field and not toward himself. He knows he's guilty of murder. But he's got to make it look like the captains did something wrong. And that's what happens when we get into that guilt. We'll always try to point the finger. The best thing you can do is cut your fingers off. And don't point them at anybody else the rest of your life. The book says it in the New Testament. Guess what? If your hand offends you, cut it off. Best thing you do, if all you're going to do is use that thing to point and accuse somebody, the best thing you do is cut it off. Oh, I know that. I'm just using that as an example. The whole story we're talking about goes to this up here. But anyway, he dresses the man down who didn't make the decisions, trying to put the blame back on the one in the field who was only following the orders of David. And he said, who smote Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal-Seth. Boy, that's a hard name to say. You know what that word Jerubbaal-Seth means? Shame will contend, or Baal will contend. The idols will contend or wrestle with you. The idols will always wrestle. You got an idol, you got a battle coming. Hear me? I don't care what kind it is. It don't have to be a little golden calf. It don't have to be a little anything. Anything you've got as an idol in your life, you're going to have a wrestling match one of these days. Which way is it going to go? It's going to be God's way. But you know what? If you lighten the ship with your own hands, it's a whole lot easier to let them go. No matter what it is, whether it's some person, place, or thing, or any thought process you have, if it's something that's an idol, you best be turning it loose, because God's going to wrestle it out of your hand. He's liable to pull your arms out of socket if you hold on too good. Okay? Best thing to do is let God have them idols, because there's a place for them. It's under your feet. He said, did not a woman cast a piece of millstone upon him from a wall that he died in Thebes? What does Thebes mean? It means two things, conspicuous and whiteness. Now, whiteness can mean one of two things. It can mean righteousness, that's a positive. But what would whiteness mean in a negative context? Leprosy, absolutely. And Thebes was a place where he died, so I don't think I'd look at that as a positive, righteous thing. He'd done something stupid, and he got killed by a piece of stone. He said, why went you near the wall? He said, then you say, thy servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. Now, that's all David wanted to hear. Hey, I'm free. I am home free. Nobody knows. And you know what? I guarantee everybody inside the walls of Jerusalem knew about it. Because the people back then are just as bad at gossiping as they are today. And I know how they are today. Gossip travels faster than the internet. So you know what? Everybody in Jerusalem already knew it, but no one had the guts to say anything. And we'll get that a little later. And Nathan will come back in the next chapter. And see, it takes a man of God or a woman of God, a prophet of God or prophetess, just say it, a prophet, an inspired speaker of God, someone God sends to speak the truth when nobody else will, even in the face of a king. That'll be next week. Okay. So the messenger went and came and says, shewed, but it should be told David all that Joab had sent him to do for. And the messenger said to David, surely the men prevailed against us and came out to us into the field, and we were upon them even to the entering of the gate. What he says was, they come out in the field, we got in the battle, and we was whipping them, and we went clear to the gate with them, and they got us. You know what? They come to the gate, but they did not enter in. You know how many people stop right there? They come to the gate where the greatest opposition is, and all you got to do to get around that, to get above that thing, is take one more step, and you're in. It's no longer Passover and Pentecost, but now it's Tabernacles. One more step. See, and everybody comes that Passover, Pentecost, and then stop. They think they have arrived. We've got them to the gate. And you know what? If you don't enter in, you will die at the gate. Did he not die at the gate? Same thing. We have to go on in. Would it have been easy to go on in? The biggest battle you ever had is going that last step. The biggest battle. To step in. But only if God permit. They did not enter in. And the shooters shot from the wall upon thy servants, and some of the king's servants be dead, and your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. David said, all right, the fire's been put out. God won't get me now. I'm free. Hang on, David. That's right. Hang on, David. That's, I'm talking to all of us. All of you, hang on. If you think you got something hid, hang on. Because God will surely reveal it. And you know why he's going to reveal it? Because he loves you so much he can't leave you in that hell. Remember what David said? He would not suffer the soul of his righteous to leave his soul of his righteous in hell. Right? He's not going to. God loves us so much that he won't let us stay. Even though we want to stay in it, he's going to take us out of it. Now that's love. He's going to do what's best for us no matter what we think. And David said to the messenger, "Thus shalt you say unto Joab, let not this thing displease you, because the sword devours one as well as the other. Make your battle more strong against the city and overthrow it, and you encourage him." You know what David did right there? He said, "You tell Joab, don't worry what he's done. You just killed a man for me. You were my hit man. You put him in position to die. Don't you worry about it, that everybody dies by the sword, no matter here or there. They're going to die. Soldiers die. What we call today in our wars, collateral damage. These people die. Don't worry about it. Just go on and do what's right. You just go out there and encourage him." All David was saying, don't get on a guilt trip and come back to me. Sure he is. The king wanted it, so don't worry about it. You don't worry what it is. Didn't the book say that we are kings? We can make those same mistakes. God set him as a king. God sets us as kings. You know what? We can make the same mistakes. And if we try to cover our tracks just because we're afraid of facing the consequences of what we did, then we are very immature. And I'm going to tell you, the suffering will be great. And it will not be God's hand upon you. It'll be your hand upon you. Just like David's mind. What do you think the hell was in his mind, what he knew he did? And don't you know that as long as you do something like that and cover it, you're always afraid of one thing. The Hittite will always be there, the fear of someone uncovering that information. Do you think you could ever have a peaceful life with that? You can never have peace as long as you have your Bathsheba hidden somewhere, or your Uriah killed and buried in the sand like Moses killed the Egyptian and buried him in the sand. And remember the man came up the next day and he was fighting with another one. He said, "Well, you going to kill me like him too?" His sand man come back and bit him, and that's when Moses took off. He couldn't handle the pressure. And I guarantee you, God's not going to let it slide. If we got something buried, it's going to come out. And the whole time it's buried, you're going to be saying, when I hear the knock on the door, is this the one coming to get me? Is this it? Don't you know David knew that God was going to come and get him? He just didn't know when. And if anybody believes that hell is down in the center of the earth, I'm going to tell you it was between David's ears that day, from that day forward, when Uriah died. And the rest of his life, he was always worried. But David did have to worry. God loved him a whole lot. And he was faithful enough to send him a prophet in this next chapter to relieve him of that and to acknowledge, "Son, I know what you did. I still love you, but you're going to be chastised. I still love you."
What about this man here today? I'm just sending you a car up at Walmart. And there's a store. And it's changing him up, and he's trying to park, and he gets his car and he's rear end.
Mm-hmm.
And he's packed up, and he's looking all around. And he's, yeah, but he's just like this, he's looking all around. He's subject to me. I want you to skip all the questions. He's a question. I don't have any in Walmart, and when he came back down, I watched him. He was real pan with it.
You know something you can do in a situation like that where someone backs in a car and you see it and there's nobody else around or anything? It's something you could do. Just write down the number and name, say, I'm sorry, but I backed in your car. Here's my license number. And you can contact me. Yeah. I know, but if you do it, then somebody's got something to go on. It's anonymous, but it'll get the job done. I'm sorry I hit you. Here's my license number. Contact me. Get the job done, won't it? Larry the cable guy would say, get her done. Okay? Let me finish this up. And when the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she mourned for her husband. Normal process. And when the mourning was past, David sent and fetched her to his house, and she became his wife and bare him a son. But the thing that David had displeased the Lord. A lot of times we have our Bathsheba experience with our woman, and we try to hide things. But I guarantee you, what the flesh and the soul produce will always be exposed. And since the flesh and the soul can produce no life, guess what it must do? Whatever you produce, guess what happens to it? It must die. We'll see that next chapter. Okay? Before we break up, I want to let you know that we have a lot of food left over from the funeral, and we would like you to stay and help us devour some of it, because it's way more than we can handle, and we'd love to share it with you. Okay?